This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
Isn't it convenient that we have a round table?
Well, it's actually oval. Just saying.
Yeah, the blind guy feels it now, goes, well, I don't know. Well, I guess it is oval.
Kind of oval.
Remember when we'd get some of the listeners to participate in the roundtable? We should go back to that sometime, maybe in the fall, right? Maybe we'll see if some people are interested in being guests on the roundtable on a Thursday and chatting with us. And, you know, maybe that's ahead, folks, in the fall. We'll think about that, and definitely always love participation and having fun on here and people who sign up to be a part of it. And, you know, really, again, as I always say with Bill, we don't know where he's going to go, and these poor guys don't know where I'm going to go. Just like probably the poor guy waiting to come in and be with us doesn't know exactly when we're going to call him in. So, all right, let's bring him in. Jim Crisco, he's our guest today on the program as we get into the roundtable that we do every Thursday, this open conversation handpicked by myself are the items that we talk about. So we bring our AMI content development specialist in Edmonton in to join us on the table. James, how are you?
I am doing very well. And I have to say, for anyone, if you do choose to invite people on, it's fun. It's very enjoyable with you guys because the conversation always gets very interesting. So this is a
great time. I honestly thought you were going to warn people away from it.
Yeah, me too.
I really
wasn't sure
did.
Because Falcone used to that. Elena Falcone used to, what do you want to talk about on there? Never mind. Just come on up. Why? When we first started doing it and the word went around, I'm like, guys, I'm not going to ask you, like, we got a show here. We can't alienate the audience with crazy stuff. Well, I guess we could try, but speaking of crazy stuff, Jim, you want to talk about the Edmonton Oilers for a moment?
Sure. We've been very active the last couple of days.
Is this a good sign?
You know, we're this season, this part of the season for Oilers fans is always called the optimism season, because we haven't had to prove anything yet, but they have made some changes. I think that they are good changes. So I once again am optimistic going into this year.
So the thought is it's hard to get, whether it's athletes to come over or want to sign a contract with a Canadian team, and probably vice versa if you are used to playing on a Canadian team or your home is here in Canada. And I think the NHL is probably the best example of it, to land some of these people because of the pandemic. Jim, would you say this is probable and making things a bit tougher, even though there's a lot of movement?
I would agree. I think that it's not only the pandemic. There's always been some things that, you know, whether it be taxation, travel, there's always some things that sort of weigh against some of the northern teams. And this year, add to it the pandemic, because, you know, the travel, even, you know, many of these young men or young players don't move their families up, and they want to visit with family. That might make it harder. So I'm certain that that's weighed into it for sure.
Rami, we're seeing this with, obviously, as concerts start to wake up, and I'm not just talking having a live show, but you just wonder how many people are hesitant to go into the U.S. or vice versa if they're an artist needing to travel, yet knowing, man, I this is my livelihood.
Yeah, exactly. I think that there's a huge challenge with just kind of either finding a balance or getting over the hesitations and, you know, insert whatever other words you want to do there. But that kind of, okay, I got to get out. I want to, you know, the passion's there, but it's a weird time, right? And maybe one thing trumps another in this case, emotionally, mentally, and maybe even with what you're able to do physically.
You bet. We're doing a lot of thinking. A survey recently from the Angus Reid Institute suggests that the pandemic has changed the way that most Canadians think about their future with long-term care. Take a listen.
The poll says the views of more than 80% of respondents have changed since COVID-19. About half say they now dread the thought of themselves or their loved ones being in long-term care. Long-term care residents have accounted for the majority of virus deaths. Three-quarters say significant changes, if not a complete overhaul, should happen in long-term care, though responses were divided on just how to do that. Three-quarters of respondents also say they support making long-term care a fully integrated part of the public health system. Jerry Smith, The Canadian Press.
So let's start with that. I know for myself, when my dad, when we had concerns and wanting to put him in where he'd get better care as his health declined into a nursing home, it was, will they take care of, will they treat him okay? And you know, not to suggest people are going out of their way to do whatever or be nasty or anything like that. You know, you're always going to have somebody that is not, you know, that doesn't have the passion or, excuse me, compassion and in the job. Jim, over the years, I'm sure you've encountered family members, friends having to make decisions. Have you seen the change now in the conversations that you have with people post-pandemic, post what we saw in Ontario, where a lot of, well, around the country, a lot of promises were made after the first wave of, we're not going to allow this to happen again. We are going to take action, and a lot of places action to change things, to give supports to people working in nursing homes, didn't happen. Is this something that you are in those conversations hearing people really make a change that, like, I don't even want to go in one if possible, or what things are they saying to you?
You know what? Definitely the conversation is different. I have friends that have an aging parent who is still quite active and quite healthy, but in, you know, I think late 80s, early 90s. And the thought, she currently lives in her own home. They were looking actively for a senior's apartment or a senior's facility for her to move into, to transition into something that was easier prior to the pandemic. And now that the pandemic has come through, they've basically said, you know what, we're going to let her live where she is as long as she possibly can, because there is a level now of, I think, distrust over the care that you can. And it's not just the care. You're right, Kelly. It's not just how you're taken care of on a day-to-day basis, but the overall, you know, we really dropped the ball as a society on how the pandemic spread through these facilities. And so I think it is a different conversation that now, if you're active in it, if you're having to make those decisions, I bet the decision now is different than it would have been a year ago.
Yeah, and it gets really scary about when you think about it. And Ramya, I feel younger people have it more on their mind now than usual. So many people don't think about it. We're accused of that. But younger people with parents of any age, is it on your minds?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's so painful, Kels, because I know several people whose grandparents passed away and parents passed away during the pandemic in long-term care homes or in hospital beds. And we know the kinds of challenges and the pressure that was on the healthcare system. But at the same time, you know, I come from a place where my parents are always teasing, joking, but really, we come from a community where you take care of your aging parents, right? The community takes care of the elderly. And for communities that was the norm traditionally, then we come and settle in a place where long-term care is normalized, right? That kind of care is what you think eventually your parents will end up with. And now it's like the sudden shock, this yes. break where we're pausing and we're going, wait, what is happening? Like, this is not a reliable solution. This is not even potentially an option anymore. And we're really, it's not just distasteful, but it's starting to feel scary thinking of your parents in long-term care.
Well, Jim, as I said, a lot of people feel that way and have, but now we don't want to be blaming long care for inadequate, what we can say, financial support, human bodies to help run places, because this has been a pre-pandemic situation.
Absolutely. The pandemic shed the light on, you know, perhaps it's underfunding, perhaps it's under regulation. I don't know. I you know, my mom was many years ago, was in a senior's apartment, and they had, you know, activity people, and they had people working in there. And I can say that the care was really, really good.
Right.
But that's not to say that this pandemic couldn't have happened there too, as far as how it spread. So clearly it's got to be some guidelines that we have to change or something that we have to be able to tighten up. But, you know, the other part is too, it's still largely a for-profit model. So you have to make sure the money's going to the right places, and maybe it becomes really that much more stringent on the family to be able to find the right properties to be at. So it's a really, really tough decision, but it's, you know, it's one that we're all going to have to face and add to at some point.
I'm in a tall order to make sure you get the information that you want. A major Toronto hospital network is introducing a policy that requires unvaccinated staff to take a COVID test before work. Take a listen.
The University Health Network hopes to have it implemented August 9th. Staff have to report whether they've been vaccinated against COVID-19, if they have a medical exemption, if they decline to share their status or won't be vaccinated. Employees who aren't vaccinated or won't share their status will be given COVID-19 tests to be completed and reported 48 hours before coming to work. A UHN official says between 85 and 90% of full-time staff are vaccinated. Roger Ward, The Canadian Press, Toronto.
Did we talk about the new cost in so many things now related to the pandemic? You see here, they're going to be given the kits, and I know stuff is being made available, but as time goes on, price of everything is going to start going up, and we're going to see these things reflected, and businesses are they're in enough trouble now. It's hard because, you know, so many of us say, well, can't people just go and get vaccinated? You don't want to take it away from them to have that choice. However, we do that in a lot of cases when kids are, you know, 2-4 years old. Well, they can't come to school here unless they've had all the shots they're supposed to.
Yeah, it you know what? This is a whole difficult conversation. It really reflects back on the last conversation we had of the seniors as well, is the monitoring of the vaccinations. And it's clear that if it's someone's own decision whether or not they want to get vaccinated. But if you're exposed to people who may be of compromised immunity or illness in a hospital or in a seniors care facility, then it's a different game. It's a different ball game. My question too is the accuracy of some of the testing, right? If it seems like the short-term testing doesn't appear to be as accurate. So that's a sticking point as well.
Rumya, we think about kids who are under 12. They have no choice, but they're supposed to be in school. They're supposed to be doing stuff. And if someone says, well, I'm sorry, I'm not comfortable, I can't. It's such an itchy spot.
Yeah, and I do come from the perspective, Kels, where we want to be mindful, okay? And whatever that means, do we say, okay, there's a percentage of the population that won't get vaccinated, can't get vaccinated, is hesitant about vaccination, whatever it is, we still have to be mindful. We still have to acknowledge that this population exists, right? However, you can't do it in the face of safety. Like, we have to make sure that we're still, while things are reopening and while we're opening up travel again and while we're considering the kids, right? Like under 12, as you're saying, we have to make sure that our environments are not posing huge threats and we're having holes all over the system because we're not acknowledging or, you know, trying to say, okay, well, hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll just do our best. We can't risk it that way. You know, with the new variants, with all the things that are still going on that are unknowns, we don't know what kind of threats it'll pose in the future to just say, fine, let's not keep track of vaccinations. Of course we have to, but I guess the tests are one way of saying the plan B is, you know, if you're not getting vaccinated, maybe this will help at least keep track.
Well, and I don't want to see some of these plans, let's do the testing, let's make you do it so much because sooner or later you'll get annoyed and you'll just go get the two shots. And I know, I say I don't want to see that. I hope we get a simpler way of doing things. I hope the proof is in the pudding that we're safe taking the shots or whatever concerns people have so that we can, you know, dispel some of that. PBS is planning to end iconic show cartoon Arthur next year. Take a listen.
After more than 9,000 wonderful kinds of days, Arthur is ending with its 25th season. The longest-running children's cartoon in U.S. TV history, Arthur has tackled issues from bullying to cancer to autism spectrum disorder. And season 22 of the show premiered in 2019 with an episode featuring Mr. Ratburn's same-sex marriage. Fans of the popular PBS series distraught by the news that their favorite glasses-wearing aardvark is ready to retire. Will Gans, ABC News, New York.
Okay, what's your iconic cartoon, Jim? For whatever your reason, what would you say, this is the iconic cartoon for me?
Well, first of all, if I may mention, when I heard that Arthur was being taken off the air, I was hoping it wasn't from something he said 15 years ago.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Because that would have been devastating to me.
Yes.
Times have changed.
Exactly. But you know what? I mean, this is a cartoon that's been off the air forever anyway, but of people of a certain age, which is my age, I would have to say the Flintstones was mine. Every day I'd come home from school for lunch and watch the Flintstones, and I'd see the same episode 30 times and I still liked it. So yeah, the Flintstones was mine.
I mean, my favorite was Scooby-Doo, but I think when I think of something that I thought, well, do I want something that changed a perspective or a show that supported me? I've always said that kind of strangely enough, Mr. Magoo, as inappropriate as some people would feel that is now for me as a blind person. It really helped me as a kid have someone to identify when I felt most lonely, as much as it's a silly cartoon. But yeah, I think for me, it was Scooby-Doo. Rum, you didn't grow up with the kinds of cartoons we're talking. I don't just mean because you're a little younger. I mean, that wasn't what you guys watched in your household. But is there anything similar or that you would say would be recognized?
No, it's Arthur.
It is Arthur.
I love Arthur. This is just, it's so, I'm like sad and
did
happy.
Did you love Arthur
nostalgic.
As an adult though? Because you didn't really watch cartoons.
No, but I watched Arthur. Arthur was the only thing I really, really watched. Well, that and the Magic School Bus, but Arthur is like, it's just like the stamp of my childhood. So when I hear this, that Arthur's coming up there, I mean, I have the first 10 seasons downloaded, so it's fine. But I can't believe it ran for this long. I don't even know what current day Arthur looks or sounds like. I hope they didn't make it 3D or anything like that. I hate when they do that. They changed the animation, Akil says. I don't know. Don't tell me. I'm covering my ears.
I wonder if Akil has all 20 year, well, 25, but you know, if he has them downloaded or somewhere in a DVD collection. Jim, as usual, thanks a lot, pal, for being with us on the roundtable. Always love having you on board.
Thanks, guys. Always fun.
We'll talk to you again probably in the fall. We'll have Jim back. And we do this every week on the program. We settle in on a Thursday afternoon. We call it the Kelly and Company Roundtable, and we do it on Thursdays because it's the easiest way to find AMI staff if we need any of them involved. We'll do it next week, and Alex Smythe will be joining us. We'll take a break and let you know what's coming up on Now with Dave Brown tomorrow. We'll preview our show as well after this here on Kelly and Company.
You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.